Welcome to this Target Antibiotic podcast. The topic of this podcast is upper respiratory infections. By introduction, my name is Dr. Graham Deuce. I'm a GP and I'm the RCGP clinical champion for antimicrobial resistance. Also joining me today is Cleena.
Hello, I'm Dr. Cleena McNulty. I'm a medical microbiologist and I am clinical lead at Public Health England for the Target Antibiotics work.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us today. So, as discussed, we're going to be discussing upper respiratory infections today. The reason this is important is antimicrobial resistance is a serious threat to public health, with most antibiotics for this condition being prescribed in primary care. A common presenting upper respiratory infection in primary care is acute sore throat. This would cover conditions such as pharyngitis and tonsillitis. Symptoms last around a week. Most people get better without antibiotics from these conditions, whether or not it's caused by a virus or bacteria. Therefore, in view of the increasing concerns regarding antimicrobial resistance, and as most upper respiratory infections are self-limiting, there are still some concerns that antibiotics are overused in conditions such as sore throat and acute otitis media. So, Cleena, is there any evidence that supports there is overuse of antibiotics in these conditions?
Yeah, there are two sources of data which confirm this. First, there's the clinical practice research data, and that shows that 60% of patients with acute otitis media or tonsillitis are prescribed antibiotics. And then there's also a patient survey Public Health England did in 2017, which shows self-reported use of antibiotics for these infections. And they're about, the self-report is about 40% for each of those infections. So these are the different, they're slightly different results because obviously the one in the community is patients, all patients who have tonsillitis or acute otitis media in the past year. There is, though, an EU target set by a group surveillance on antimicrobial resistance. And that group advise that under 20% of patients presenting with acute otitis media or tonsillitis to general practice should receive antibiotics.
And yet you're saying there's 60% prescribing currently occurring.
Yes, so it is higher. Although that clinical practice research data is obviously not completely current, and there has been a reduction in prescribing over the last 2 years. But also, there's definite evidence that we can make a change because there's two other things that there's. We've got audits in general practice and between practices which show a variation in prescribing by practice and by clinician, which is not explained by clinical case mix. So that's the first thing. And also in the Netherlands, the community prescribing is half that seen in the UK. So we still do have opportunity for improvement.
Okay, so it does sound as though there is definite overprescribing of antibiotics in upper respiratory infections.
Yes, although can I say that when you have somebody who's severely ill, then they do make a real difference. So it is important that we assess each patient individually.
Absolutely. So how can we reassure clinicians to change their practice and not issue antibiotics for these less unwell patients?
So qualitative research has shown that general practitioners and other prescribers prescribe for three reasons. The first is patient pressure, and I think I'm going to come back to you on that, Graham. The second is relief of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And the third is preventing complications, and that's really something they're worried about. So let's look at relief of symptoms. If you look at all these respiratory tract infections, they have a longer duration than many patients expect. And actually, those are covered in the target leaflets, so you can share that with patients so they understand that. But the difference antibiotics make in all these patients is between 8 hours and a maximum of 24 hours to those symptom durations. Also, additionally to that, the other evidence is that, for example, for acute otitis media, the number of patients, you need to treat 18 patients to have one patient who gets symptom benefit. And also, the number you need to treat to prevent a complication is in the thousands. If we move on to tonsillitis and other respiratory tract infections, and we're looking at number needed to treat to improve symptoms, it's 6 to 20, in sinusitis 18, and 10 to 20 in bronchitis.
Okay.
So that is high, and therefore we do need to try and direct treatment to the correct people. If we look at complications, they are actually rare, and there's been a large study looking at practices. And the conclusion is if you have a practice of about 7,000 patients and you go have a 10% reduction in antibiotic prescribing, you may expect one additional pneumonia per year. But obviously we want to prevent those, and that's why we're always talking about safety netting. So I'll go back to you, Graham, now, because I want to go back to that patient pressure. What actions can clinicians take to reduce patients' expectations for an antibiotic?
Well, I think this is a very difficult situation and does partly explain, if not excuse, overuse of antibiotics. By way of example, I saw a patient yesterday who'd only been seen the day before and had come back because a sore throat was no better. Her sore throat duration at that point was 48 hours. So it's very important to explore her concerns about the condition, to discuss what she'd done for self-care, understand how long she'd had her symptoms for, and explore what her expectations were around treatment, in particular the role of antibiotics. I think in this situation it's important to provide the patient with information to help them understand why antibiotics aren't useful, and I think some of the numbers needed to treat you've just given us would be helpful in that discussion with a patient. I think there is potentially the role of deferred antibiotics, which we're going to talk about later. And of course, safety netting, as you've also mentioned, is very important. So reviewing patients 2 to 3 days if they are no better.
I think also it's actually really important to empathise with the patient, because actually, you know, all these infections make the patient feel really ill, even if antibiotics aren't going to make a difference.
Absolutely. And I think that patients are there because they want to feel better, not because specifically they want an antibiotic. So I think if you're providing reassurance around the duration of the condition and what is unlikely to happen as a result of it, and the measures that they can take themselves to improve their symptoms, I think in most cases that will help assuage the need for antibiotic prescribing.
So, Graham, are there any evidence-based clinical scoring tools to help clinicians identify who should be prescribed antibiotics?
I think we're seeing an increase in the use of these clinical assessment tools. There is a couple I can think of. One would be fever pain in the use of tonsillitis. Another one would be StarWave, which assesses children at greater risk of admission when presenting with a cough. Now, in terms of using an assessment tool, I think we are using them more and more within primary care because they provide a treatment guide. I think they could be easily added as a template to the GP clinical system. And also they can support discussion with the patient around a decision about whether you're going to treat them with antibiotics, give them a deferred antibiotic prescription or no prescription. And then this is also something that can be uploaded into the clinical record. So where GPs are concerned about not prescribing, I think you can demonstrate an evidence-based tool that you've used in forming that decision. So turning particularly to the fever pain score that I mentioned we could use in tonsillitis, it is now an established tool. It is recommended by NICE. It has an evidence base, and it was tested in a trial comparing 3 different prescribing strategies. And the outcome was that the use of the scoring system reduced antibiotic prescribing by a third. Now, hopefully, most people will be aware of the fever pain score and hopefully using it, but would obviously encourage consistent use for patients presenting with sore throat. It considers factors such as fever in the last 24 hours, whether there's purulence on the tonsils, and how quickly they've attended with their symptoms. As a result, the score that the fever pain gives you predicts the likelihood of a streptococcal infection and whether an antibiotic is indicated, whether it should be delayed or indeed not prescribed. So this, as mentioned, is something that can be very useful to help prescribing decisions and also to help reduce the use of antibiotics for a self-limiting condition. So we talked about tonsillitis, but maybe when considering upper respiratory infections, other people would be thinking about otitis media. Can you tell me anything we should be doing in someone presenting with earache?
I think this group, I mean, there is certainly a lot of parental and carer expectation for antibiotics, and it's one area where we use a lot more antibiotics than in the Netherlands. So we do have a substantial opportunity to optimise antibiotic use in this group. So there are a group of patients who you would be more likely to prescribe antibiotics. So one of them, if you've got otorrhea, or the patient's under two, or they've got infection in both ears, then antibiotics have more benefit. But even in those patients, you need to discuss the benefits and risks, because the number needed to harm is also quite high. That is the number who will get side effects from the antibiotics.
Absolutely.
Obviously, there are people also who are children who are systemically very unwell or at higher risk of complications. You should always prescribe in those patients.
So I think the whole message around antimicrobial resistance is preserving the antibiotics for those who need it and being more confident in your clinical decision to not prescribe where appropriate. So the same NICE guideline that you've mentioned also refers to children and young people who may be less likely to benefit from antibiotics. It suggests considering no antibiotic prescription or perhaps a backup prescription, taking account of the fact that antibiotics may make little difference to symptoms or the development of common complications. These would include short-term hearing loss or a perforation of a tympanic membrane. Even rare conditions such as mastoiditis have very little difference in likelihood of occurrence whether or not you prescribe antibiotics. But I mentioned there, Kleena, regarding no antibiotics or perhaps delayed antibiotics. This is a strategy that I think has been around for a while and is being encouraged more. But could you tell us if there's any evidence around the utility of using a deferred antibiotic prescription?
Right. So certainly they're called either delayed or backup antibiotics, or sometimes deferred.
Is there a difference?
Well, no, there isn't a difference. It's just that when we questioned the general public, they found delayed, they were confused about delayed, so we moved over to backup. And deferred might be meaning that you're not using them at all. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's difficult. So we tend to use, we're advising to use the term backup. But they're not really used all that much. But there is definitely evidence that they can reduce antibiotic use by 30 to 40%. And a recent study in acute tonsillitis showed that delayed or backup antibiotics had similar complication rates to immediate antibiotics, and these were lower than no antibiotics. And this is probably because the patient has control over whether to take antibiotics or not, and you're giving them advice about self-care and when they should seek advice and when they should take the antibiotic. So they are able then to take that antibiotic if their symptoms become more severe. So that explains the reduction in complications. So also, there's been quite a large study by Paul Little et al. Showing that how you delay your antibiotic, how you inaction it within the surgery, makes little difference. But it does, you do need to come to an action plan and decide on a definite way of doing it. So you can give the patient the printed prescription. You can ask them to collect it from the surgery and come back. Or you can put a delayed date on the prescription. Or you can tell them to re-consult if they become worse and they have to see you again. So the only difference is that if you give the patient control, they have slightly greater satisfaction with that. But I think you have to think about the individual patient as well, and what you think is best for them. So, okay. And what is best to fit into your practice, and also the day of the week. So Fridays, it might be different to other days.
So I think that would be reassuring for prescribers within primary care to hear that you can use a backup prescription, not lose patient satisfaction as a result, and indeed it can be a shared decision, and you can indeed empower the patient in the whole process as well.
Yes. And also the other thing to note that there is another difference between delayed and immediate. If you give them an immediate antibiotic, they expect an antibiotic every time, and it increases expectations for next time. Whereas a delayed antibiotic actually reduces expectations, so they're less likely to come back the next time. So the target toolkit has some information for patients. So Graham, could you tell us what there is available?
Well, there's a couple of leaflets that I find are really useful. One, particularly for parents presenting with younger children, which is the When Should I Worry leaflet. And it provides lots of helpful advice. And I think possibly first-time parents may help them to be a little bit more certain as when or when they don't need to present with their young infant. In addition, we encourage clinicians discuss with patients the target respiratory tract infection leaflet. This gives very clear information regarding expected symptoms and durations, and helps, I think, reassure the patients as to why no antibiotic has been given. It's also obviously important to go over self-care, as we discuss, you know, what are the patient's concerns, how can you help them in other ways to get their symptoms better. But of course, what we don't want to do is any patient become unwell. And so safety netting is important, and particularly the NICE guidance around otitis media, for example, would suggest review at 2 to 3 days if symptoms have not improved. More and more, we're seeing community pharmacies involved with self-care. Do you think there is a role for them in such conditions as otitis media and sore throat?
Yes, very much so. I think as the general practices are becoming busier and busier, I think pharmacists will become more involved in the advice in patients with acute uncomplicated infections. And again, we've done some qualitative research with pharmacists, and they say they feel very confident about giving self-care advice. Although, interestingly, they didn't connect giving self-care advice as being an antimicrobial stewardship action. Okay. And was helping to reduce antimicrobial resistance. So we do need to make them, you know, help them realize and motivate them to realize that they can make a big difference to antimicrobial resistance through this. So some of the target leaflets have now been adapted for pharmacy use. And so I think patients should expect to have advice from their pharmacists, and GPs should encourage, and other healthcare professionals in the practice can advise patients to visit their pharmacists for advice before coming to the general practice, because currently it is actually quite low. So one of the things that they're also very good at giving is advice around adherence to antibiotics, and to check that the antibiotic is at the correct dose and duration, and advise patients about what to do with any antibiotics that they have left over if the packet is longer than is required. So that adherence advice is very important as well. So we've been developing some resources for community pharmacies, and so GPs may become aware of those over the coming months. Graham, I wondered what general practice staff can do to help monitor their activities around acute upper respiratory tract infection.
I think that's a very useful thing to consider. So we've talked about the wide variability of prescribing and perhaps the lack of need for prescribing across such a high number of patients. So on the RCGP Target Toolkit website, there is an audit tool. And I think this would be great to be done either at practice level or indeed at primary care network level to fully evaluate and understand current prescribing and perhaps how that could be more optimised moving forwards.
Also, maybe I could add that there are target presentations and workshops covering acute respiratory tract infections and antimicrobial resistance that CCGs and practice staff can use to help them action plan taking forward improving management of these infections in primary care settings.
Thank you. It sounds an excellent resource. Okay, so what's very clear is a multidisciplinary approach is going to be the best one that involves healthcare professionals within primary care, within community pharmacy, and of course putting patients at the centre of the care as well. We've today discussed various measures to assess and manage upper respiratory tract infections as part of the wider agenda to reduce antimicrobial resistance. Self-care is very much central to treating these conditions. Informing patients using leaflets such as the Target Treating Your Infection leaflet. The use of assessment tools such as the fever pain score. And the limited role in many patients, but certainly not all patients, for antibiotics for upper respiratory infections. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast today. It is one of several podcasts available on the Target website. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much.